very big welcome to Now That's What I Call Sport on 98FM.
98FM. Now That's What I Call Sport with Jamie Moore.
Hello there, good morning, and you are very welcome to Now That's What I Call Sport on Dublin's 98FM. It's our first live show of 2020, so a very happy new year to you and yours. Nathan Whelan, happy new year to you, sir. Welcome back. It's great to have you again.
Thank you very much, sir. Happy new year.
After your four-week Christmas break.
Four-week Christmas break. Did you get a four-week one as well?
Well, you were off the show before Christmas, then we had two best-of shows, and now you're back. I haven't seen you in 4 weeks.
I didn't realise we were keeping count. Or else you just miss me that much, which is a J. Oh, you missed me.
Now, coming up between now and 10, we're going to hear how Premier League coach Alan Irvine helps prepare his players to face some of the best teams in the world.
They have fantastic qualities and fantastic strengths. But like every team that there's ever been, they have weaknesses as well. They don't have very many, but you have to identify the weaknesses that they do have and try to exploit those weaknesses.
Ireland manager Mick McCarthy will tell us if 18-year-old Adam Ida has fired himself to his first Ireland senior cap by scoring an FA Cup hat-trick yesterday.
Hey, he might have just got himself one, never mind you getting one.
We'll hear from the Cork-born Norwich striker himself in a few minutes' time. We'll ask where next for everyone involved in the League of Ireland in the current FAI shambles with the head of the League Managers and Coaches Association, Mr. Stephen Henderson.
You know, we're far from stupid. Some of the best football people in this country are walking here within the League of Ireland and they're starting to get a voice. Now, this voice has to be constructive.
Dundalk captain Brian Gartland met with the Sports Minister Shane Ross this week. He'll be on the phone. The Dublin Hurlers opening game of 2020. Ballyboden St. Enda's semi-final loss yesterday and yet another win for Leinster will also be on our agenda. So let us get 2020 on the road.
98FM's Now That's What I Call Sport with Jamie Moore.
Now, we're going to continue our special feature from the FAI coaching conference, which I was at in Carlow recently. We've heard from the likes of Terry Connor and Vera Powell and Jer Dunn and Stephen Kenny. This time, it's a fascinating chat with the man who has to work with multi-millionaire footballers on a daily basis. He's coached and managed at Preston, West Brom, Blackburn, Norwich, and is now back at Premier League West Ham as assistant manager to David Moyes. He joined back with David Moyes last week when Moyes was reappointed boss. So this chat with Alan Irvine, it was on just before the Christmas break with Alan Irvine, who just gave a presentation on how to beat Man City, or at least give your team the options to do so. Of course, Alan managed Preston, Sheffield United and West Brom, and assistant manager at Everton, Blackburn, Norwich and most recently West Ham, played for Scotland and a number of other clubs as well. Alan, thanks for having the chat. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Yeah, I've thoroughly enjoyed the 2 days here. Fantastic organisation, great setup, great facilities and really good presenters, and the trip's been well worthwhile from an education point of view for me.
Yeah, I just mentioned there the clubs that you've worked at, mainly Championship level and Premier League level. What was it like and how was it working with and coaching Premier League multimillionaires and players who are at a very, very good level?
Well, first of all, it's fantastic. Obviously, like any other coaching role, it has its challenges, and the challenges will differ at different levels, but they'll differ from player to player. You know, you have some players who are an absolute dream to coach, and you have some players who are more difficult to work with. But you, as the coach, you have to find the best way to work with all of the players, and particularly with the Mavericks, because they're the guys who can win you the games, but they're the ones who will probably give you the most problems. And but when they do work on behalf of the team, then that's really fulfilling and really satisfying.
Yeah, and the weekend here has been a nice mix between hearing from speakers who work with younger players and speakers who work with senior players, whether they be club level or international level as well. Did you find working with the Premier League players that they still wanted to be coached, and did you have to coach them or put sessions on maybe a little bit differently to how you would with younger players?
Well, without a doubt, you need to coach differently. I say to lots of young coaches or players who want to become coaches, go and work with young players. You know, find a group of young players who you're going to really spend a lot of time with and try and develop them, because that will challenge them as coaches. That will make them have to find a different way of trying to get a player to improve. They will continually have to work out when to stretch the players and when just to kind of make things a little bit easier for them. And that won't just apply to the whole squad. That will apply to individuals within the squad. When is it you're going to have to really challenge players, and when do you need to be a little bit more careful, and at what pace do you move things on with professional players, with Premier League players? Clearly you have they already have a lot of the qualities that are formed, but I've never ever worked with a player who wouldn't want to listen to you if they thought that you could help them. And so as long as they believe that you can tell them something that can make them better or give them a better chance of even just winning a game at the weekend, they'll listen and they will try and do what you're saying.
And you spoke in your presentation today, which I've seen, that the listeners and the viewers won't have seen it, about an opposition analyst you did as the West Ham first team coach to play against Man City last season when David Moyes was a West Ham manager. You might just in shorter form explain the process you went through to try and help your team, who were playing against a team that were going to win the Premier League that year under Pep Guardiola and were just so brilliant at football.
Yeah. Well, first of all, it's about gathering information. It's about looking and seeing what they do when they have possession, what they do when they don't have possession. Man City, as you rightly say, were an unbelievable team last year. They're still an unbelievable team this year. And clearly they have fantastic qualities, and fantastic strengths. But like every team that there's ever been, they have weaknesses as well. They don't have very many, but you have to identify the weaknesses that they do have and try to exploit those weaknesses when you have possession of the ball, which, as I mentioned a number of times during the presentation, might not be for very long during the course of the game.
And you also spoke about the different top-level managers, from Pep Guardiola himself and the work he puts in to opposition stuff, even though his team are the best. And you said about Arsene Wenger, who maybe doesn't or didn't at the time look on it with too much importance, and Jose Mourinho and Jurgen Klopp and others, and the real mix of opinions at the top level of how much to go into the opposition in comparison to your own team, and even to hear someone like Wenger saying, well, I really don't care about the others, it's my own team that I want to focus on, and then someone like Pep, who is the best, still giving his players info on the other team.
Yeah, and it's, you know, there's no right or wrong here. When Arsene Wenger, who I have the greatest of respect and admiration for, who made radical changes to the way that the game was played in England, when he decided that, okay, I'm going to focus on the Arsenal players and our way of playing and the things that we feel are important, I had full respect for that. But I also was aware that when they were winning, that was praised heavily and rightly so. But when they were losing, people started to talk about, well, he doesn't have a plan B, and the players don't know what the opposition are going to do. They're getting surprised by that. And that, you know, that's a shame that he's been criticised in that way. But it just shows that everybody has an opinion after the game, dependent upon the result. Arsene Wenger was right to do it the way he did it. Jose Mourinho at the other end of the scale was right to do it the way he did it, because that's what they felt was the best way of getting results for their club.
And in terms of the meetings with the players, and we spoke to Gerard Dunne yesterday as part of this feature, and you know, his presentation about how he works with the Ireland senior team as the analyst, and you're working with, say, West Ham, for example, as the coach or the assistant coach or the manager who's actually maybe delivering what the analyst has helped you put together. And your number of clips there were like 12 minutes on Man City and all the functions of the game, and then maybe 6 minutes on set pieces. And that, you felt, was enough because the players will be sitting there looking at you going, stop talking, I want to go and train.
Yeah, there's a limit to just how much they can take. So the actual presentation to the players on the day, probably the general play one would have probably lasted 25 minutes. The separate set play one probably lasted 10 minutes. We feel as if that's about as much as they're going to be able to concentrate for. And of course we have the added advantage that we will go out in the pitch and work on things. Having shown the general play video, we will go out and then set up tactically in terms of that and make reference to it repeatedly, and those references will be getting made again on match day, reminders and pulling groups of players or individuals and just making sure that they haven't forgotten what their responsibilities are.
And having spoken to Stephen Kenny yesterday, I was so impressed with his knowledge of China under-21s, Brazil under-21s, and all these, and knew all the players by name, by club, by value, by everything. And when you were doing your presentation there, you know, every team that you showed, you were able to instantly name the player and their role in something. And that's very important when you're presenting to the players, that they know you know. But I know we're all Premier League fans, but to be able to have that much knowledge, you're watching one clip, you're able to go, that's X, that's Y, that's another one for all the clubs. And I'm sure for a couple of divisions, not just the Premier League, which is something that comes with time, but it's still very, very important.
No, and as you rightly say, it takes time, but it is important. It is important to put names on players, because that's just reinforcing the messages. Really, you're making sure that they're aware of who the individuals are. And even, you know, yeah, there were times when I spoke about players who weren't Man City players and weren't West Ham players, but I talked about them by name. Why? Because you might be saying, well, there's a mismatch because it's this particular player playing against that particular player. And now, you know, if it's at a set piece, then, there's an aerial disadvantage perhaps for Manchester City, which would be one of the areas of weakness which teams will try to exploit just because of the height of the team. But, you know, Pep looks at the team and thinks, well, I want very, very good footballers in, and I don't care what height they are. And he's aware of the fact that leaves him a little bit vulnerable at set plays against.
And I wanted to finish on a quote, Alan, that you said towards the very start of your presentation, at the end of all the coaches that I've heard from and spoken to for this feature, and it was, make sure it goes from your head, as in the coach's head, yeah, into the player's head. Yeah. And whether you're working with a 9-year-old or a 19-year-old or a 39-year-old, that's the job of the coach. And sometimes you see, and even myself, you get really frustrated and you go, actually, you should have known that, or I told him that. But it's also the coach's fault if the player doesn't get it or know what the information is. And you said that some players take information differently, but that was a really nice quote, just to say, from my head, the coach, to your head, the player, that's, yeah, in essence, the job.
Yeah, and you will have to find different ways of doing that. And it is your responsibility as the coach to make sure the player understands it. It's not all his responsibility. And, you know, you can have a whole team of players, and certain players will get it when you say something in one way, or you show something in one way. Others won't. So you have to show it in a different way or say it in a different way. And so it's finding a way to make sure that all of the players understand what it is that is expected of them.
I don't know, everyone, fascinating stuff. Thanks a million. Enjoy the rest of your weekend in Ireland, and we'll see you soon.
You're welcome. Enjoyed it. Thank you.
And thanks again to everybody at the FAI's Coach Education Department for facilitating that chat with Alan Irvine, the now new West Ham assistant manager. If you missed that chat, it'll be podcasted just after 10 on our website, which is 98fm.com. Now, still to come, we'll be talking all things FAI in the League of Ireland context with Stephen Henderson and Brian Gartland. We'll hear too from the Dublin hurling boss Matty Kenny and Leinster head coach Leo Cullen. But next, 18-year-old Corkman Adam Eda on his hat-trick for Norwich City in the FA Cup yesterday in front of the watching Ireland manager Mick McCarthy.
Yeah, definitely, Sam. It's been a great start to the year for me. Obviously, to get a hat-trick tonight was just unbelievable. And yeah, I'm over the moon.
98FM's Now That's What I Call Sport with Jamie Moore.
Good morning, you're very welcome back. It's our first live Now That's What I Call Sport of 2020. It's great to be back. It's 9:20 on Sunday morning in Dublin, and Nathan Whedon is still beside me. Nathan, Leinster Connacht yesterday in the Pro 14. Tell me more, sir.
Leinster ran riot at the RDS yesterday. They beat Connacht by a whopping 54-7. Leo Cullen's men secured a bonus point inside just 20 minutes as they ran home 8 tries, which included a brace for Gary Ringrose and Max Deegan. Dave Kearney, Kieran Frawley, Joe Tement and Luke McGrath also completed that route. The Blues head coach was thrilled with yet another impressive performance.
I think going into the game you're a little bit concerned, because obviously there's 14 changes off the back of last week, and you know, what does that cohesion look like? You know, to be fair to the guys, I thought they trained well this week. You're never too sure what it's going to look like in a performance, but you know, I thought they showed really good, I suppose, a really good endeavour. I think the intensity was good, like right from minute one, really, you know. And you know, we did the simple things well, you know, very effective, scored tries in a number of different ways. So yeah, no, overall that was pleasing first half. What was it, 6 tries in the first half? So very, very pleasing. Second half, you know, like, Yeah, because we did, not that the game was similar, but like there was certainly similar aspects 2 weeks ago against Ulster. So we talked about trying to just making sure we keep our shape defensively. Second half, maybe we were a little bit passive. I thought Connacht, you know, to be fair to them, held onto the ball for long periods. And, you know, they were just good in terms of their attack, I think, Connacht. So it was good to be, like, we held them out for the most part. Obviously, we give away a try from a driving line-out. But overall, no, we're pleased. We're very pleased to get a number of guys through the game. And, yeah, it gives us plenty of headaches, obviously, going into round 5 and 6 of Europe now.
Leinster are now 11 points clear of Ulster at the top of Conference A, who recorded an impressive win of their own on Friday night, dominating Munster by 38 points to 17 at Ravenhill Stadium. Leinster are in Champions Cup action next Sunday. That kickoff is 1 p.m. against Lyon.
Now, the Dublin Hurlers get their 2020 underway later on today at Parnell Park.
Yes, they play in the Walsh Cup against Carlow later today at Parnell Park. Throw-in there is at 2 p.m. after they beat Westmeath just before Christmas. The Dubs face Galway next Thursday at Parnell Park. That's 7:45 throw-in there, with the winner of that round-robin phase emerging to face Galway in the semi-final of the Walsh Cup, with Wexford and Kilkenny in that other semi-final.
Yeah, you can check out that Dublin team on at @DubGAA official on Twitter. And that is where the current manager, Matty Kenny, has been reflecting on 2019 and looking ahead to 2020.
Sport throws up all these sorts of challenges, and you know, last year, you know, the team was improving as the year went on. I suppose it came to a bit of an abrupt finish when we got knocked out of the championship. But look, in sport, it's important that you you learn from the past, and you bring them learnings with you. But you've always got to be looking forward to the next game. It's always about the next game, and you got to dust yourself down and get ready for the new year. So look, the guys are working away on their pre-season gym programs. You know, they're looking forward to 2020. We'll be back in January in Parnell Park, and as I say, it's a very, very busy January, and into the league at the 26th. So, you know, the season is pretty close now. So, we're all looking forward.
Now, from the hurlers to the footballers, Nathan, and Desi Farrell will take charge of the first game of his tenure as Dublin football manager next weekend, after his players have come home from their Christmas New Year holiday in Bali, and they tweeted a photo of all the lads on the beach with all of their partners and girlfriends and wives and husbands and boyfriends and so on, and they're like, you know, the type of shirts that you would wear, the outrageous holiday sun shirts and the vests. And it's very nice that they can go and relax a bit of R&R before a new season under a new manager.
Yeah, it's a great motivator, isn't it? To be, you win the All-Ireland, you go on an amazing holiday. Seems to be a continued tribute that they have now, but I suppose I'd be doing the same. As you mentioned there, the Dubs footballers, they will be in action next week against Longford in the O'Brien Cup semi-final. It's next Saturday on the 11th of January at Glennon Brothers Pierce Park at 2 p.m. As you mentioned, Desi Farrell's first game in charge, so it'll be interesting to see how they fare. And the Dublin ladies footballers get their league campaign underway at home to tip on the 26th of January.
Yes, up the Dubs, can't wait to. We're chatting about and talking about Dubs and the ladies and the men and the hurlers and the camogie over the next weeks and months, of course, with a busy summer ahead as well. Now, it's not going to be a busy couple of weeks though, Nathan, for Ballyboden St Enda's. Their AIB club championship dream is over after a semi-final defeat yesterday.
Yes, the Dublin club narrowly lost out to Down champions Kilkew in the All-Ireland Senior Football Championship semi-final. It was on Saturday. That game finished 2-8 to 11 points at Kingspan Breffni Park. The other semi-final saw defending champions Corrifin of Galway defeat Nemo Rangers by 110 to 7 points as they go in search of a historic tour title in a row. The final will take place on Sunday the 19th of January, with the venue yet to be confirmed.
Yes, the Ballyboden manager Anthony Rainbow has been chatting to Oisín Langan.
Anthony Rainbow, Ballyboden St Enda's manager. Hard luck on losing this AIB All-Ireland Club Football semi-final against Kilkew in Cavan. What was the difference in the end?
The difference was probably our scoring efficiency at the end. We normally have a scoring efficiency up between sort of 70-75%. Today it was down around 46-47%. So, like, when you've 23 shots and only scoring 11 shots, it probably just isn't good enough in order to win a tight game like this. But in saying that, I think the team this year has been phenomenal in terms of what they've achieved, and you can only say that you can be just in general very, very proud of what they've achieved this year in general.
What do you put that poor efficiency down to, that poor scoring efficiency?
It's hard to know, you know. Like, if you look in past games in terms of Aerog and Nafin, in terms of tight games and Newtown Blues, we sort of pulled away from teams the last 5 or 10 minutes, and our accuracy was an awful lot better than it was today, and it probably does come down to accuracy. Certainly the shot selection was probably right to take it, but it's just the execution of that shot was just poor.
Now we have a new teenage hat-trick scorer.
Given his chance by Daniel Parker and taking his chance superbly. made his Premier League debut as a substitute against Crystal Palace in midweek. Started in the EFL Cup earlier in the season. And the 18-year-old from Cork has exploded now in the FA Cup scene.
Exploded is the right word. Look at the pace. He points to where he wants it. Stiefelman plays a lovely weighted pass. He doesn't have to break stride, which is exactly what, as a striker, you would like. Gets his head up, picks his spot. Coolly slots it.
Yes, of course, that is the commentary of Adam Eade's hat-trick yesterday, at least one of them for Norwich City against Preston in the FA Cup, a 4-2 victory. He's only 18, he's from Cork, he's played for the Irish under-15s, all the way up currently to the 21s, and talks of a possible senior call-up, which we'll hear about in just a moment as well. Three brilliant goals, including a penalty, and after that game, Adam Eade chatted to Norwich TV. As you can imagine, he was fairly delighted.
So Adam, you made your Premier League debut the other night in a hat-trick here tonight. You must be delighted with how this week has gone.
Yeah, definitely, Sam. It's been a great start to the year for me. Obviously, to get a hat-trick tonight was just unbelievable. And yeah, I'm over the moon.
Yeah, it was your second senior start tonight, and what a start it was to the match for you.
Yeah, definitely. I think just to get an early goal at the start brought my confidence right up and just kept going from there, really. I think Marco Sipiman assisted me for everyone, really. So we work on that in training quite a bit, and it's short tonight. No, it's good.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's Stiepermann and Jamal Lewis linking up behind you. It seemed like that was a move you had been working on in training quite a lot.
Yeah, we're working on quite a bit, to be fair. When we're on the same team, days in the town, obviously I'm up top. So we said tonight we'll try reenact that. And like I said, it worked and showed off.
I can probably guess, but which of the hat-trick was your favourite?
The second one. I think that was my favourite. Never done it in my life before, so yeah, it was good.
Now, the man who gave Adam Eade that chance to score the hat-trick yesterday is the Norwich gaffer, Daniel Farke.
Yes, we can't lie. He has scored three times. So for that, he deserves also a bit of praise and a bit of spotlight, not just because of his goals, but also because of his workload. And, you know, we are a club and a team who plays many young players and trusts them and backs them, but they are no gifts. So they are just on the pitch when they are prepared. And we got the feeling, of course, due to a few injuries, but also like Adam is right now prepared to deliver on this level. And yeah, he was able to grab his chance and to show a really class performance, like I said, not just because of the goals, but also because of his whole workload. And I'm pleased with him today.
Adam Eade and Daniel Farke speaking to Norwich TV. The Ireland manager Mick McCarthy was a pundit on BT Sport, and Jake Humphrey, the presenter, was trying to get Adam Eade an Ireland call-up.
I spent all day trying to get a full cap for the Republic of Ireland for Adam Eade, who scored a hat-trick for Norwich.
Hey, he might have just got himself one, never mind you getting one.
You reckon?
Well, he's scored a hat-trick today, and he's playing in a real competitive game. Not a 21s, not a 23s. It's an FA Cup tie against a good Preston team.
So, Nathan, Jake Humphrey of BT Sport says Eade. I say Eade. So the man to settle this debate is Adam himself, who I'm going to try and get in the show in the coming weeks. Famous last words, but the first question shall be, how do we pronounce your second name, Adam?
I reckon it's Eade. I don't know why. I think I've always just guided towards that.
Okay, and I'm saying Eade, but I could be wrong.
And I could be wrong.
Indeed. Now, of course, he wasn't the only teenager in FA Cup action yesterday or today. And a great headline in... Is that the Sunday Times or the Sunday Indo?
It's the Sunday Times.
And what's the headline about? Four teenage strikers who could be the future of Irish soccer, if there is an Irish soccer future.
Spot the pun. Could Ireland strike it lucky?
And here are the four players. Adam Eade is one.
Adam Eade is one. Aaron Connolly, Michael Obafemi and Troy Parrott. We are definitely blessed with great talent coming up through the ranks.
Yeah, Troy Parrott's Tottenham in action later on today in the FA Cup. Away to Middlesbrough, who ironically, their assistant manager is Robbie Keane, who's Troy's coach at Ireland and his hero as a striker for Ireland. So yeah, that'll be interesting if Troy scores and runs over and does the Klinsmann in front of Robbie Keane or the famous Robbie Keane cartwheel. Wouldn't that be cool?
It would be cool, but I think Troy likes to stick to the standard fist pump in the air. Is that his go-to?
That's it, the little jump.
A fist pump, yeah.
Have you another FA Cup story there involving Will Smallbone, is it?
I do indeed. He was in action for Southampton and he impressed on his senior debut. We scored their opener in the 2-0 win over Huddersfield. And elsewhere, Rochdale, who secured a hard-fought 1-1 draw with Newcastle to force a replay there, of course managed by Brian Barry Murphy, who's the son of Cork GAA legend Jimmy. So it was an all-round great day for the Irish.
Yeah, a couple of ex-League of Ireland players involved in that game as well. And Liverpool-Everton, the big game today in the FA Cup. It's at 4:01 down in Anfield. And of course, it's great to see everybody on Twitter this week talking about Liverpool as the greatest ever Premier League team. The greatest football, the greatest... everything, manager, players and so on. Nathan is a Man United fan. And
spot the bias.
Yeah, spot the bias, indeed. Well, I just think they're great, but thanks.
I agree with you, but I don't think you can say they're the best team ever. If they go undefeated, invincibles, they'd be right up there with the 03-04 Arsenal team. I can't argue with that.
Thanks, Gary Neville, for your punditry there. Now, we're going to move on to the FAI. I'm going to get serious on it. That's what I call sport for the next 25 minutes or so. We'll hear in a few moments' time from, of course, Stephen Henderson and Brian Gartland. But now, a quick update from John Fallon of the Irish Independent, speaking to our own Adrian Kennedy about why the FAI need to be bailed out to the tune of €18 million from the Irish government, effectively the taxpayer.
Just a bit of context on that. I think the reason why they must play ball is because there's no other option here. Like, if this was a normal company, the receiver would be called in and the company would be wound up. Okay, but this is Irish football we're talking about. And the ramifications of the FAI going bust are just, it's just really unthinkable, because we have a senior match coming up in March, a Euro 2020 playoff. That game would be in jeopardy. The staff, as you said, would go without wages. We've got four games coming up in the summer as part of Euro 20. They would probably be under threat as well. So that's where the government must be involved in some shape or form. They're not going to put money in to what they call a black hole. Like, I would say that this money will be provided by Bank of Ireland or the FAI's funding partners. Where I can see the government coming in is perhaps in some degree having a role as guarantor. Okay, they haven't ruled that out. Let's be frank about that. There was two meetings in Christmas week, the public one on the 16th of December. But there was a second meeting between the FAI and Shane Ross on the 20th. And he has not ruled out that possibility. So that's where I can see this going, that the government will have they'll have a guarantor involvement in it. But it would also, in exchange for that, give them a greater role in the run of the FAI. We know that the way the FAI was run, we don't have to go into too much detail on that, but the new FAI is going to have four independent directors of 12 as a third. I can see that probably increasing, because they will have a much greater say and a much greater influence of things. And in order to restore public trust, which is very important, because they've got to sell tickets, they've got to get sponsors. You know, a government intervention or a bank intervention is only a short-term solution. It has to be sustainable over the long term. But I think for that to happen, the public have to be convinced that this is a new FAI. And in fairness to the seven new directors, I think they do deserve a chance to get that opportunity. And that's something that I think the likes of Brian Kerr has mentioned, that the people who are now at the top table were not there when all of this, should we say, carry on with Rife.
That's John Fallon of the Irish Independent speaking to Dublin Talks and Adrian Kennedy. That full podcast available right now in the podcast section of 98FM.com, as well as this chat with Dennis Hines of SIP2, who represents 45% of the FAI staff, and he's been talking about their morale.
Oh, it's desperate, absolutely desperate. You see, for a long time, even when we issued the statement we had back last April, April of 19, staff were being reassured by management. You know, if I'm not concerned, you shouldn't be concerned. Don't be worried. Everything will be fine, you know. And I suppose the thought that, look, at everything will be okay. And they just got on with the job. But then there were issues around staff getting paid their expenses, because a lot of staff would do their own drives and so on. And now we find ourselves in a scenario where, come the 25th of January, is the money going to be in the account to pay for salaries? And the FAI are sitting down and looking at how can we cut, how can we save money, how can we restructure? And I do believe, and in answer to your question earlier, I do believe that the government has some part to play in it. We looked at how money has been, let's be honest about it, would I prefer to see a couple of million being pumped in to provide that soccer for the kids in the areas I've just spoken about, or would I prefer millions being pumped into watching a printer being kept in a warehouse? I'd prefer to see it going into the soccer. And I think that that's where the community would be. We've all seen how money has been squandered over the past, you know, with banks and bailing out the banks, and I suppose people would have a concern of that. I'd have a concern about that. But I think that whatever plan has to come up here, it has to be self-financing going forward, and it has to ensure that there's a complete clean-out. There has to be a complete clean-out here to give people confidence and reassurance and so on. Mm. No one wants to see taxpayers' money going back into a black hole. The staff don't want to see that either. And if you look at it, the people who are going to have the pain here is going to be felt by innocent staff who've worked hard, who are committed, who are on modest income, and who've been loyal to the association and love the game of football. And they're the ones that are going to suffer the most for the sins of the others, of the few. And I suppose that's the most heartbreaking part of all of this, you know, when you look at it from the outside.
That's Dennis Hines of SIP2, who represents 45% of FAI staff. Still to come on the That's What I Call Sport on 98FM, we're going to find out what the situation in the FAI means for the League of Ireland with Stephen Henderson from the League Managers and Coaches Association and the Dundalk captain Brian Gartland after an apology from outgoing President Donal Conway and reaction to that infamous tweet over Christmas from the Minister for Sport, Shane Ross.
I really don't make comment on Minister Ross. I know the particular episode you're referring to did cause a lot of anger and a lot of upset.
98FM. Now That's What I Call Sport with Jamie Moore.
You're very welcome back to That's What I Call Sport on Dublin's 98FM. It's Jamie Moore here on Sunday. Very happy to welcome our first live guest of 2020. It's a man named Stephen Henderson, who, would you believe, was my goalkeeping coach for Belvedere back in the day. And he calls me JMO the Cat Moore, and I've never lived that down. Stephen, good morning. How are you?
Good morning to you, young fella. You well?
I'm great, sir. Yourself? Happy New Year.
And the very same to you and your whole family, my friend.
Now, Stephen is the interim chairperson of the League Managers and Coaches Association of Ireland, also UEFA Pro Licence holder, has managed and coached across many of the top clubs in Ireland across his career, and now is the head of youth development at Shelburne. And Stephen's here in his role with the League Managers and Coaches Association. Just give his views on the FAI and the League of Ireland and the point of view of the people working in the League of Ireland, whether they be managers or coaches and so on. And we're going to hear from Dundalk captain Brian Gartland in a few moments, who was at that meeting with Shane Ross and a number of League of Ireland reps during the week. But first of all, we'll speak to Hendo. Stephen, you've been very vocal on social media in the last number of months about the FAI and what's gone wrong. What's your overall view on what's happened in the last couple of weeks and what the prospect and future holds for those working in the League of Ireland?
Well, I wouldn't say I've been vocal over the last few months, JMO. I think I've been vocal for the last decade or so, as have many people, to be honest with you. We were all very concerned in how football in this country was being run. We had a feeling there was stuff going on in the background. We made that vocal, myself, people like John Sullivan, former Cork City chairman, people like that who've been in the game and seen it going on. So it was, you know, it's happened now. People have seen just how bad things are, and like everything in life, you know, when things get worse, they have to get better, and they had to get worse, and this had to be exposed, and people had to see firsthand what exactly we felt was going on, was actually happening. So I think the positive side of this is that we found out, do you know what I mean? We've actually found out that, you know, there's been a lot of unsavoury stuff going on within the FAI. There's an awful lot of really, really good people who work within the FAI who are going to be affected, who have been affected, and who will continue to be affected until this is sorted out. So, you know, it's really sad state of affairs for where we are with Irish football as a whole, not just with the FAI, but the SFAI and all other bodies who are in control of football in this country. We're all taking a battering, rightly so. But now the process has to start. The healing process has to start. And, you know, how we're going to do that, there's been a few meetings, but, you know, that's all they are, they're meetings. What we want to see is the actions come from those meetings and then see where that takes us. But from my own personal perspective and many people who have a genuine love of the game in this country, it's a good thing that all this has been exposed and that we can start the healing process.
And of course, we do have to say as well, our own League of Ireland hasn't been without its issues and problems over the years, and maybe certain people running clubs that shouldn't have been running clubs as well. But we do hope that in the future, in 2020 onwards, that we can have a stronger League of Ireland and a League of Ireland that's more important to more people in this country, because the people, Stephen, who work in it and coach in it and play in it and those who support it massively love it. But the challenge is now is to try and make things, you know, much better for everybody involved, that maybe more people can go to the games, and hopefully a new League of Ireland can be born from these FAI issues.
Well, that's what we're hoping for. You know, we listen to Shane Ross. Shane Ross seems to be the figurehead for this. He seems to be a man with very limited knowledge of sport. You know, that's the way he just comes across. You know, he's gone from grassroots, been the heartbeat of football in this country, now League of Ireland. Now he's had another meeting, now it's League of Ireland is the heartbeat of, you know, he seems to be very reactionary kind of character. Whoever he talks to 2 days ago, that's who he goes, he tends to lodge the most the next day. So that's a little bit concerning, that he doesn't really have a real grip on the intricacies of the football in this country. That's a great word, by the way.
Yeah.
So that would be a little bit concerning, but we'd have to, the players had a voice there the other day, and it'll be interesting to see what points they brought across, because we do have some of the most talented coaches around Europe are working here in the League of Ireland football. People would laugh at me for saying that, but you know, they genuinely do. They work under very difficult circumstances. Infrastructure here is a huge problem in terms of League of Ireland football. Some of the stadiums need a lot of tender loving care. Some of the training facilities that the clubs have to work out, that managers and coaches have to work out, are really poor. You know, some clubs are training three different venues a week. It's hard going, and there's a lot to do. But, you know, there's genuinely a lot of really great people work within football within this country, and specifically in League of Ireland football. Because I always felt that, you know, we were the most vocal, we were the most concerned about how things were getting run. And, you know, I think the more we were perceived as these poor relations, as these fellas who can't even update their stadiums, who can't get training facilities, who can't pay their players. Where gambling, I think that kind of stuff was promoted to make us look stupid. And, you know, we're far from stupid. You know, some of the best football people in this country are working here within the League of Ireland, and they're starting to get a voice. Now, this voice has to be constructive. You know what I mean? We can't be, you know, putting all this 10 years, 12, 15 years, you know, of neglect and be frustrated with it and start coming out and being angry. We can't afford to be angry at this particular moment in time. We have to be very constructive and sit down and have really constructive conversations about how we're going to drive football forward in this country. League of Ireland football has the potential to create thousands of jobs if it's done correctly, Jamie. And when I'm talking about that, you're talking about not just background jobs, you're talking about players, jobs for players, jobs for managers, jobs for coaches, jobs for sports scientists, jobs for strength and conditioning coaches, nutritionists. There's a whole spectrum of work there across the sporting industry, provided we do it right. So this is at a time now where, you know, we have to be really constructive. We have to have a proper plan. We have to put a business plan together for League of Ireland football, and that has to be presented in an intellectual way. And so we can get the sponsors on board and we can get the investment in. And when we get that, if we do that and we do that properly, we will have a fantastic product here, Jamie. There's some fantastic young players here in this country that are crying out for a stage to show their talents. To an extent, League of Ireland does that. And, you know, and that's a credit to the people who have run these clubs at this moment, you know, to keep League of Ireland, because it's the League of Ireland clubs that have kept League of Ireland going, because we've been getting battered and knocked back, and there's been no love given to it whatsoever. So now we have an opportunity to really push League of Ireland football to the front, where she deserves to be and where she needs to be. Get the proper finance into it. We've been calling for governments to get involved with this for years, but I think we're starting to see why they didn't. You know, the more stuff that comes out of this FAI, the more horrendous it is, the more heartbreaking it is. But like I said, look, it's time now, you know, to put all that behind us, be constructive, have really good meetings, talk to people who can invest in us and, you know, and start creating proper jobs and a proper pathway for young players in this country.
Great stuff. That's the voice of Stephen Henderson, the interim chairperson of the League Managers and Coaches Association of Ireland. Hendo, thanks for your time. And like many people in Irish football, he's now off on a Sunday to go and watch games all day in the wind and the cold and maybe the rain as well, to try and discover the next generation of talent for League of Ireland, FAI and so on. So Hendo, enjoy the rest of your day. Thanks for your time and we'll see you soon.
You too, my friend. Thanks a million, Jamie.
Now, Nathan, the Sunday newspapers again covering a story that broke during the week about the FAI owing on Garda Síochána just a few quid.
Just a few, yeah. The Sunday Times claimed that the An Garda joined the list of the FAI creditors, claiming that the organisation now owe the Garda Síochána €360,000 for policing international games. It just seems that the more information that emerges from this whole FAI scandal, it just seems a lot more farcical. Also, the Sunday Times claimed that the government meets UEFA in Dublin in 9 days' time as they attempt to hammer out a deal on saving the FAI, which, of course, is probably going to come from the government.
Yes, now, speaking of meetings, Ministers for Sport Shane Ross and Brendan Griffin met with League of Ireland players, the PFAI, and others on Friday. One of the people at the meeting was Dundalk captain and PFAI committee member Brian Garton. He's on the line now. Brian, good morning. Happy New Year. How are you?
Good morning, lads. How's things?
Good, thanks. Yourself?
Yeah, good. Well, not what it sounds. It's smothered here, but could be worse.
Yes, indeed. Getting ready for pre-season, I'm sure, as well. So, Brian, you were at that meeting on Friday. How was it? What was said? And what did you think of it overall?
Yeah, I suppose it was, you know, you have to take the positives from it, first of all. And It was club representatives and the PFEI with a good few players from the women's and men's side at the meeting. So it was positive that we were invited. We had a seat at the table to, I suppose, give our opinions. And it was all to do with ahead of this meeting with UEFA, and I suppose to help the ministers in terms of their message when they go to UEFA. I think we went off track a few times, and people got their own personal sort of agenda for the clubs in there. But from it came a lot of good points that, I suppose, it summed up where we are in football in this country here, the struggles we have, and what we need going forward. So hopefully the minister gets, I suppose, the point across, and UEFA and the government can work together to, I suppose, help save the association, first of all, and all the jobs that go in with there. And that was a positive message from that. It was, you know, that they're fairly confident that it won't go into an examinership, which is great to hear. And from that, I suppose it's another meeting we need after that, when we know the direction we're going. And the other positive was that League of Ireland is central to the future going forward, and that's the message we got from the ministers.
Yeah, and I suppose the main headline, Brian, coming from it was that Shane Ross did say that he didn't foresee the FAI going to the wall or going bust. Now, he didn't confirm exactly how that will happen, and we heard from John Fallon from the Irish in there earlier on about, you know, what that deal might look like, and Paul Cook, the interim chair of the FAI, has been speaking about that at the recent press conference as well. But for you guys as League of Ireland people to hear that from the horse's mouth, I'm sure it was something that you felt very reassured about.
Yeah, it is reassuring. I suppose the minister's comments summed up, I suppose, part of this country's knowledge of the League of Ireland and football, is that they don't know it, that there's an industry here, and that it's a big game for maybe half the population of the country that are involved in it, and the rest, I suppose. The problem is that we're looked down their nose at us, and the brand maybe isn't, I suppose, popular and flash enough. So with those comments, I suppose it summed up where we are, and the reassurance from them that the government, that the FAI, you know, likelihood is that it'll be okay, means our league, our jobs, our livelihood, you know, are all reassured to a point. Like at Dundalk here, we're all full time, plenty of lads have kids, have mortgages, so it's like anybody else in any job when I suppose times are vulnerable and you don't know the future. And we know that over the past 15, 20 years in this country, and a lot of people know how it feels. I suppose we were in that situation, and we still are, but I suppose it's just sort of taking a bit of a weight off shoulders for ourselves.
Yeah, and for those listening as well, you know, Brian summed up well, there are, you know, a number of people in the hundreds in Ireland who earn their full-time wage from the League of Ireland, whether that be administrators, players, coaches, managers, support staff and so on. Not every club is full-time, but a number of clubs are full-time, and all the part-time ones, the majority anyway, you know, do pay wages of some sort. So, you know, a lot of people do depend on the League of Ireland for, you know, income of some sort as well. Brian, I'm not sure how many people were in the room on Friday. I know, I think every club was represented from the men's side. A number of women's National League clubs were there as well, and also the PFAI. What was the mood like in the room? And in general, when people were leaving, what sort of small talk was happening about what was said? And were people in general happy with those initial meetings with the ministers, Ross and Griffin?
You had to be happy with how it went. We had a platform to get our points across. Everyone had time to speak. Whoever wanted to speak could speak. It was an open floor. Like I said, I think we went off point a few times with, I suppose, people, you know, this maybe is a problem that we have in the football here, and not to do with the FAI, not to do with government, but to do with ourselves and the clubs, is that people always have their own agenda and their own club's agenda. And we need to put, like I said, we need to put them aside, I think, for a while. And the good of football has to come before anything. But I suppose, like I said, the points were brilliant. I was really impressed with some fellas in the administration sides of clubs, the knowledge they have, the business expertise, and the forward thinking and the level of detail to go into, I suppose, in analytics and the different how they look at the football and the government and side of things. So that was very positive for me, because I know we've got great people at our club, but I've been at other clubs and I've seen how things are run, and it's great to see that across the board there's plenty of people with good knowledge. So, you know, I'd be fairly confident with things in their hands. I suppose that business-wise, the league would go in a good direction. And speaking of that, I suppose a point I made was, and Gary as well, and it's a point we have from the football side of things, that if the league is taken from the FEI as such, and maybe club ownership, as we've seen since, I think it was 2007 or 2008, around then, the FEI took over the league, and before that, the clubs had owned it. It hadn't worked out under the stewardship of the FEI, obviously for various problems, and it was neglect. But we feel that club ownership, say, of the league, and then that's like up in Northern Ireland or in similar places, even over in England, is that you have independent people in to run the league. You don't have clubs with their own agenda. You don't have people voting for their whatever's the good of their club and not the good of football when it comes to big decisions for the league here going forward. So that's what I suppose the Players Association we'd like to see when we do get down to that thing that way. But it's a long way away from that. We're waiting on, I suppose, this meeting with UEFA, and from them, when we know answers on the outcome of the FAI, what can be done, how can be done, and the I suppose rescue package. And we know what direction football's going in this country, then we can talk about the future. But before then, we need to set contingency plans in place so that if the worst comes, we're planned for it and the league won't be effective.
Yeah, hopefully the worst won't come. And Brian, just last, we've about 2 minutes left on the clock. You mentioned about how you feel, what you feel should happen with the league moving forward, that it may move away from the FAI and, you know, be run like the Northern Irish League or be run like the Premier League in the UK, where it's linked to the parent association, but it's run by a parent company, a different company as such, with all of the clubs, you know, involved in that. How would you see that, you know, from a practical point of view, if and when it actually might happen? Because there's been debates in recent months from the likes of Niall Quinn's group and the Kieran Lucid group about the All-Ireland League, which seems to be dead for now, certainly. But the League of Ireland, you know, is due to kick off in, well, it will kick off in kind of 6 weeks' time, and it will be run by the FAI for this year. But moving forward, what would you see as the ideal scenario for how the league is actually run and by who?
The league, whether it's owned by the FAI or by the clubs, like I said, I think you need to have... I suppose, like what's going in the governance side of the FAI now, you need to have independent people on the board making decisions for the good of football. And I suppose previous, when the club owned it previously, back in the mid-2000s before then, you would have had votes on large-scale things, and each club is going to vote whatever is benefit to their club, you know, whatever puts money in their pocket and things like that. So when you have, I suppose, independence on there and you have people making decisions for the good of football, it can take away that sort of slight bias and put football and the league first. Obviously, there's a lot more detail to it. And there is different things. I think the other day we got a bit mistaken by one or two people when we said independently run. I think they were taught independently owned. Independently run doesn't necessarily mean that the clubs don't own the league or the FAI don't. It just means that you have somebody in there, or you have a setup in there that's, you know, it's like I said, the decisions are for the good of football and good of the league. And that would be a massive thing. The other thing is then, by doing that, I think you have business people in there, you hire good people to do it, and that filters down to the organisation. Like I said before, our brand in this country and our brand as football, obviously because we're compared to the Premier League the whole time, it's on the floor, and that's even before the FAI League of Ireland. Like I said, it's looked down, it's, people look down their noses at a large portion of people. I don't think they realise and know the scale of professionalism that is throughout the league, the talent and the hard work, the perseverance, like every other sport in this country, and that seems to get the appreciation. I think we have that, but I suppose we don't have those fancy stadia, and when it comes across in TV and I suppose the training facilities and stuff like that. So we're in an age and an era now when everything needs to be fashionable and fancy. So it's a brand we need to develop, and we need to build up and make it fashionable to people, make it appealing, and I suppose have a niche. So I suppose, yeah, it's a long way away, but it's really, really positive at the moment to think that we can, I suppose, shape our own future in football here. And the League of Ireland has to be the top of Irish football. It's the highest standard of Irish football outside the international team, so it needs to be the pinnacle, and you need to centre around it going forward. Unfortunately, when the fruition of all this comes, I'll be long finished playing, but it's a great opportunity for this country, for the association, for the government, and for everyone involved in football.
Gareth, listen, I'm sorry to stop you there. I'm so out of time. We'll continue this on the podcast during the week, if that's all right. I appreciate your time.
All right. Yep.
Thanks, Gareth. Sorry, I'll be late for news. I'll be sacked on the first day of the new year. See you soon.
Yeah, see ya. Bye.
That's Brian Garton, Dundalk captain. That's it for another week on the show. Thank you so much for listening and to all of our guests. We're back next Sunday from 9, folks. See you then. Bye-bye.